This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
It came right down to the wire. We expected to see some sort of a mega deal, but raise your hand if you thought it was going to go to the running back yesterday, not the quarterback. Derrick Henry gets signed, and all of a sudden we have a new deal for him and nothing for Dak. Golic and Wingo, ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80, Jason Fitz in for Trey with Mike Golic Jr. And guys, you'd have read all about it yesterday if you could have.
So I'm wondering if... if, Mike, how you got your information yesterday, because we have a generational gap here between you and I, obviously, and the Twitter world went bonkers yesterday. We're still not back on Twitter, you and I, so I'm wondering how you survived yesterday.
I curled up into the fetal position and sucked my thumb for a while. I went for a long walk and contemplated what my life had become where I had been so dependent on this stupid site.
I was just going to say, how many people that live with the phone in their hand were losing their mind, because it was a lot of yesterday, was it not?
Yeah, there was a massive data, there was a massive security breach at Twitter yesterday. A lot of the verified accounts got, their ability to tweet taken away for a while, and supposedly it's all back, but you and I have been locked out since last night with no sign of return. Twitter support has not been very much help in this situation, so this might just be the end, which, you know what? This is awesome. Maybe I'll get a lot more done now that I'm off this website.
I know I would be fine with that, but I don't know if you would be fine
with that. I'd be more fine than you give me credit for. I already going vast amounts of time without answering my phone. You and the family group chat know that all too
that
well.
Is true.
I check out pretty regularly. So.
How about you, Jason?
Now, I'll give you the other side of the perspective because, I kept reading yesterday that blue check marks were all shut down off of Twitter.
Where were you reading this on Twitter?
On Twitter. And all of my buddies are like, oh, I'm finally back. And I'm looking around. I'm like, that's when you realize that you have the check mark, but you just don't have it. Like, whatever the threshold is, Twitter was like, oh, we got to take care of this. We got to make sure. Nah, we're good. Yeah. Like, there was a line, the nah, we're good line. I am below the nah, we're good line.
So you were basically walking around at one of those masquerade parties, but in a very much Twitter meme sense. You had the clown mask on in it instead of one of those fancy ones.
I did not get the appropriate invitation to the party. I realized how small my Twitter platform is yesterday. But it would have been, now that I think back on it, it would have been a perfect time to say something really, inflammatory. I could have, nobody else could have that space. I could have overused the moment and taken over, controversial Twitter.
But you didn't.
No. It would have gotten three likes at that point anyway.
Hey, three for me means going viral. I get double digits and I'm happy. All right, Golic and Wingo presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. We got a bunch of them today. They're going to help us get their insights into everything that happened yesterday. We expected some contract news. All eyes coming up to the deadline at 4 p.m. Eastern were on what was going to happen between Dak and the Cowboys. The answer there is nothing. But there was a significant deal coming right up to the deadline, and it was for Derrick Henry, who signs a four-year extension with the Titans that includes $25.5 million guaranteed. We haven't gotten all of the details of the contract yet, but we know that Derrick Henry is going to be there for the long term. And guys, this one to me made a lot of sense because the Titans are in love with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry has made it clear he wants to stay there. Plus, as we talked about a lot yesterday, the free agent running back class next year looks stacked. We don't know what the money situation for the NFL is going to be like next year, given whatever their profits turn out to be this year. So for Derrick Henry, he gets locked into 4 years. The Titans get to keep their guy. I mean, this made sense on both sides to me.
Derrick Henry was the leading rusher in the NFL last year. It wasn't going to get any better, right? I mean, it wasn't like he was going to say, okay, I'm going to play on the franchise tag and show them I deserve more money. He was the highest paid or the highest yards rushing in the league last year. And I don't think, at least you may think different, Mike, I don't think it's going to change from a reception standpoint. He had 18 catches last year. He is not a running back that catches the ball out of the backfield, and this offense doesn't dictate that happens. So he's never going to be in the range of Saquon, of Zeke, of Christian McCaffrey, of these other guys that catch the ball a ton. Alvin Kamara, these guys, Kamara and Saquon, they're going to go by this number. Because right now, Derrick Henry is the fifth highest paid running back in the league. He's topped out. I'm the leading rusher in the league. That's what I do. And this is the deal that came from it. Next year, we're unsure of where the cap may be because of COVID. As Jason has mentioned, and we talked about yesterday, some of the running backs that will be available next year, he would get, in my opinion, from the top paid, get lost in that shuffle. So this is a really good deal for him. $25 million guaranteed for a $50 million deal. I think it was smart of him to do this.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, this should be the paradigm for running back deals going forward. It probably won't be, and teams will probably still overpay for guys that are pass catchers. Alvin Kamara is going to be an interesting case because I think life without Mark Ingram looked a little bit different than a guy who would be deserving of a Saquon Barkley-like contract. So I don't know if I'm ready to go there just yet, but at the very least, he fits the skill set. Derrick Henry doesn't. And looking at the future, the uncertain future created by the virus, the uncertain market created by the glut of backs in the draft that we all talked about yesterday with that, this made an overwhelming amount of sense. And it's rare, I think, to see that sort of awareness, that positional awareness, that self-awareness to say, all right, while I'm confident in my ability, why would I put myself in a disadvantaged situation going forward? Why wouldn't I if I'm in a position? And this is where the relationships of football came into play. The relationship that Derrick Henry and the Tennessee Titans had of mutual respect, mutual desire to make this work in a way that makes people feel wanted in the way that Tennessee did by extending a little bit of goodwill his way with the length of the deal, with a little bit more guaranteed money than he would have had if he was tagged twice on this or played on the tag this year. That bit of goodwill on both sides allowed this to be a deal that people can look at and say, yeah, that made sense. What we'll talk about in Dallas is an example of the exact opposite of that.
Well, and what you mentioned makes sense, and I was hanging out with our friends on 102.5 The Game in Nashville yesterday, and they asked me about the Titans' mindset, and it's a fair question because the Titans as a team let Jack Conklin go. They let Jarrell Casey go. They let Logan Ryan go. All players that have gone to other teams and are expected to make a difference where they end up, right? Like, they're all still talented players, right? But then on the other hand, they invested a ton of money in Ryan Tannehill, which some people thought was questionable, and now they've invested a ton of money at the running back position. So it is curious to see how the team itself is making decisions moving forward on how they're building their roster. I don't know what the identity of roster building is for the Titans, but they obviously looked at it and said, hey, we trust our quarterback and our running back to be enough to get us through virtually anything, and those other places pieces are more replaceable.
Yeah,
and I think sending a message of, we're willing to reward players that perform at the top end for us enough. Because you're right, with the backdrop of seeing those other players leave, it's very reminiscent, albeit a slightly different situation because of the quarterback, in what happened in Carolina. You let the face of your franchise and a bunch of other spots go in ways that were a bit abrasive. The breakup with Cam Newton wasn't the best on the way out. Greg Olsen had some words when that all started about marquee players for them on the way out. And so, at some point, he is one of the best, if not the best, in his position. But with a guy like Christian McCaffrey, even though he doesn't play a premier position, you had to look around and say, all right, we got to show them that we're going to reward somebody in this.
Now, I completely agree. I think what you said earlier, Mike, says that Derrick Henry and the Titans just worked out a good deal for both. There probably will be some that said, why did Tennessee feel they needed to do that? Maybe they didn't need to do it. But, you know, a cap hit for a running back is never going to be, as far as the other positions, awful. It's down there low. A lot down there, I believe, where the tight ends kind of are, right? He's going to be, what? He's averaging about 12 a year, I think it would be.
So his 12.5 is his average annual value on this one. So that's the portion that puts him fifth highest among running backs.
Right. And then the cap hit isn't awful for this position. We know of many other positions where the cap hit is going to be higher. This just was a good deal for both sides, one that Derrick Henry definitely should have signed.
And they got an easy out after 2 years.
Exactly.
After two years, they're either going to cut him and be done with him and be able to get out with it with minimal cap damage, or be able to rework it and continue to kind of put him in a position where, all right, he's a well-paid running back.
Right.
He's probably above what most are going to make, especially as we see more of these multi-back teams. And so that could be the existence for them now.
He got rewarded for what he has done and what they're hoping he could do in the future of what he's great at, of running the football. And Tennessee, as Mike just said, has an out after a couple of years. So this is one where both sides get something of what they want.
Yeah, and the $25.5 million guaranteed is a big deal for him, because if he plays his contract out, he's 30 at the end of that. We all know about 30 in running backs. So at least Derrick Henry can look and say, okay, my life is set at this point, and I know exactly how my future looks.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
Tiger's back, which means all eyes will be on golf
yes.
this weekend. as everybody already starved for as much as we can get, was going to be, we were already going to be focused on it. But adding Tiger to it is another element of it. Don't forget, Golf Channel will air live coverage of the Memorial Tournament starting today with bonus PGA Tour live featured group coverage from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Eastern, continuing with traditional coverage from 2:30 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Tiger Woods, Brooks Koepka, and Rory McIlroy tee off at 1:17 p.m. Eastern today. It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. And with all this conversation about Tiger, let's head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line, where we're joined by Nota Begay from the Golf Channel. And Nota, we appreciate your time. Hope you and yours are safe. And thanks for the insight. We just heard Tiger talking about the energy will be different. So what's the real life effect for somebody playing when there isn't a crowd there to cheer them on?
Well, I mean, with him, there's been a crowd around him since he was 10 years old. I mean, to some degree. And I think one of the original plans for the Memorial was to, I think, allow 9,000 fans. I think that was the original. And I was joking with some colleagues of mine that there was going to be 9,000 people watching Tiger's group and nobody else watching any of the other groups. It's just going to be a different, you know. He texted me after he got there and I asked him what it was like for him just to be out there. It's like a ghost town. I was doing the broadcast for the Detroit event and you walk out and it's just a surreal experience having, you know, played so many tour events myself and with the people and the buzz and the concessions and everything that's happening. It's just not there. So it takes a little getting used to, but I think it's overall going to be a benefit for him at this point.
And then as far as the play, listen, after what he did at the Masters, when he won the Masters, and so it's just like wherever he shows up, it's the want for Tiger. Tiger's there. It's for Tiger fans, the want of him to do good. Nota, what's the reality of Tiger's play right now?
I think the reality is looking good, Mike. I mean, in all honesty, simply because I don't think there's a venue, and you look at his track record and the number of wins he's had there. I don't think there's a venue that could suit his game. You know, maybe Augusta, but I don't think there's a venue that kind of plays to his iron dominance. I mean, he's the best iron player in the history of golf. And Muirfield Village isn't the most demanding golf course off the tee. It's very generous off the tee. So the driver isn't really that big of a concern, which is why you see it favor length in most cases. And so he's going to be able to get the ball in position off the tee and then just, you know, we're going to find out real quickly where his iron play is, because if he's able to shape shots and move them into some of these hole locations, he's going to create some chances for himself. And I think he's going to surprise some people.
Talking to Nota Begay with us here on Golic and Wingo. Is there any part of Tiger that you think sees a lot of the attention being levied to someone like Bryson DeChambeau, who he played that practice round with yesterday, and is looking forward to reminding everybody who the top dog is in all this?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just, I think that Tiger understands that championship golf in the biggest events on the PGA Tour requires every facet of your game to be intact. And when we as fans and in the media get enamored with length and power and what Bryson did in being the first golfer in the history of the PGA Tour to lead an event in strokes gained off the tee statistic as well as the strokes gained putting statistic, kind of lends itself to getting a lot of attention, which is what Bryson, I mean, he was the betting favorite starting the week. I mean, when has Bryson DeChambeau ever been the betting favorite headed into a tournament that the field is stacked? But Tiger is definitely, and it might not be this week. It might be, you know, maybe at one of the bigger events, but you know, he loves to put these guys in their place when he can.
No, you just said betting favorite, and right now Tiger's 28-1 long shot odds, and bettors seem to be in love with it. So if you had to bet Mike Golic Sr.'s house, but you got to sit there and watch the whole event sitting next to Sr. knowing that his house is on the line, who do you think the smart bet is to win this thing?
I'm going with Dustin Johnson right now. I think, you know, if it would have been pre-COVID, it would have been 100% on Rory McIlroy, but I think the break kind of stalled his momentum, which I think he'll pick up. And I do still bona fide think that Rory McIlroy is the best golfer in the world right now. He just has to play his way into a little bit better form. But right now, I think Dustin Johnson, coming off that win at the Travelers, has sort of found that little special something that he's been looking for the past 6 or 7 months.
Nota Begay joining us here on Golic and Wingo. And Nota, you know Tiger as well as anybody does. So we played, and we call him Bryson DeChambeau because of the weight gain, but they had the practice round yesterday, Bryson and Tiger. And afterward, two times within one of the answers, DeChambeau said he used the term in describing Tiger and his play back in the day. Now, again, you knowing Tiger, how much do you think that sticks in Tiger's craw? Like, okay, you really think it's just back in the day stuff?
Yeah, I think Tiger doesn't like to be referred to in the past tense. And I think he reminded everybody last spring, just kind of how far back in the day, you know, got fast forwarded to present day. And, you know, here's the rub with Tiger. He was not trending well this spring. I mean, his body was a little broken up and he couldn't quite get it back to a place where he could recover in time for his next round. And so it was a gradual decline through the week as, you know, his body got worse as he got deeper into the week. And you want your body to either stay level or even maybe get a little bit better as you play your way into these tournaments. And so I think the rest, and the ability to focus on some of the stability issues that he needs to have in place to keep that lower part of his back stable is putting him in a great position. And like I said earlier, I think he's really going to surprise some people this week because nobody plays that golf course better than Tiger Woods, and that's a huge advantage.
Don't forget, the Golf Channel will be airing live coverage of the Memorial Tournament starting today. Bonus PGA Tour live feature group coverage starts at 10:30 a.m., goes to 2:30 p.m. Eastern, continuing with traditional coverage from 2:30 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Tiger Woods, Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy tee off at 1:17 p.m. Eastern. Nota, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you hanging out with us. Thanks for the insight, and enjoy the weekend.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
So right now at the Memorial, Louis Oosthuizen and Carlos Ortiz, both through six, are two under. Jordan Spieth, through a couple holes, is two under. So a three-way tie at the top as they just teed off at 7 this morning, so just a little while ago. You mentioned Tiger, 1:17 he tees off today.
I just like people being forced to bet your house and sitting next
to
you.
What was that all about?
Well, my house.
I'm sitting here doing nothing. All of a sudden, my house on the market.
Well, that's what I always do. I ask
probably going
to
be anyway, but you know.
If you ever listen to the Spectacular Show for First Take, your take on ESPN Radio from 1 to 3 p.m. You got a couple weeks left. Yeah. If you listen to that, one of my frequent questions is if I gamble your house, but
right.
You got to sit next to you because you're big, you know, you're imposing, and you have a better house to bet than I do. So I feel like it really puts the pressure on people.
I've seen your house. Mine isn't.
You got a nice place.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
Well, we learned a lot about which teams love which players yesterday as the deadline for franchise tag players to sign long-term deals came and went. Derrick Henry will be with the Titans for years to come. Dak Prescott did not get anything done with the Cowboys. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and your smart speakers. Jason Fitz in for Trey, sitting with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. And there's been a lot of conversation this morning about the fact that you two don't have working Twitter right
now.
We
do not.
Okay, so, you know, Twitter yesterday went on lockdown due to some hacking. People with enough of a profile apparently were blocked out of Twitter. I did not make that list. But I'm a little envious of you because Pete tweets us and says, why is anyone stunned the Cowboys didn't sign Dak? They offered him what they thought was a fair 5-year deal. He didn't take it. We've spent hours talking exactly why we're surprised. So, like, if you haven't heard it over the last several hours, I can't do it in 140 characters. Yes. You guys are lucky you don't have Twitter.
We wish it was all that simple. Well, they offered him what they said was a fair deal. He didn't take it. Okay, that's it. I mean,
you have 280 characters, Jason.
280 yeah. characters.
I just want to make sure you know that.
You know what sucks is somebody's going to tweet me and remind me that I was wrong
yes,
about my character
are.
Limit.
See? Like, you could be you, or you could be me over here, sitting here just giving out takes with no sort of recourse right now. No one can.
I'm just going to have to wait for you to get back on, then you can explain to me how that happened so then I can get back on. Because other than that, I'm lost.
This is like the first, but this is the funny part about this is my dad has no real earthly desire to tweet. Like, you can know he gets on like every 3 days because it's a rash of like 8 tweets or responses to tweets all at once. And now all of a sudden it's been taken away from him. He's like, well, wait, I want this now.
You know what I like about it the most is the news, is stories, is things like that, which I can get on, I guess, online as well. But that's what I liked about having the phone around, is stories I could just pluck out and read. Now I got nothing.
Well, now instead of spending your time looking at Twitter for news, you can check out 30 for 30 podcast in association with ESPNW. We present the latest series, Heavy Metals, Inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire. The 7-part series tells the story of Bella and Marta Caroli, the coaches who brought women's gymnastics in the U.S. to absolute dominance on the world stage and also enabled its greatest tragedy. Listen now to all 7 episodes of Heavy Metals Inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can spend your time podcasting.
I'll do
today.
That. There you go.
All right. Well, anybody that was looking at Twitter yesterday was trying to figure out what NFL teams are thinking and how they're moving forward, and obviously a lot of reaction. So let's get some reaction from one of our favorites. ESPN NFL analyst Ryan Clark joins us now on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Ryan, thanks for the time this morning, man. We appreciate you. So now that we know that there's no deal for Dak, in your mind, what do the Cowboys and Dak look like moving forward?
I think for this year, they look like a team that has an opportunity to win the NFC East. You look at the number of weapons they've assembled around Dak Prescott. They have him for another year. Now you have to see if that defense can take a step forward on the back end. And I don't think this becomes a problem on the field for the Dallas Cowboys, but I think this is a locker room problem. When you look at this team, and having an owner who said, listen, my hand doesn't get cramps when it's time to write checks. A guy who overextended himself for a running back that was hanging out in Cabo, made him the highest paid running back of all time at that time. And so when you see a guy who's willing to break the bank for everybody else, willing to overextend himself for everyone else, and now you look at a quarterback that you got off of the clearance rack at TJ Maxx for the last 4 years, and you don't want to pay him or you don't want to give him, I guess, the little extra that he wanted on top of what you were offering him because he is your franchise guy, because he said and done all of the right things, I think that permeates throughout your locker room. And there's going to be a little blowback from that. I think there's going to be some consequences. There's going to be a little loss in chemistry in that building. And you have to see if Dak Prescott, which I think he will, can be professional enough to continue to say the right things, which he already has about the franchise tag, continue to work the right way, and get this team to where people thought they would be last year, which was a contender in the NFC.
Well, along those lines, where is the line for Dak on where he needs to lead this team to where he can just look at Jerry and say, you ready to do the deal now?
I mean, I think this team has to get to an NFC championship when I look at it. Because when this team was assembled last year, when we look at this team on paper in the offseason, many people thought that they would make a deep run. We definitely all thought that they would win the NFC East. But let me say y'all, because I said they'd be like a 10-6 team at best. I was a little bit off there. But I think that this team has to make a deep run into the playoffs, has to get to the NFC Championship, so Dak Prescott can say, look, I can not only give you franchise quarterback play, but I can give you championship caliber play. And I think that's what Dak's going to have on his side in order to convince Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones to give him the type of deal that he wants, the type of deal that he is seeking. Other than that, I think they'll always hold it against him that 32 teams didn't think he was draftable until the 4th round. They're going to hold it against him that they actually wanted Paxton Lynch before they had to settle on Dak Prescott in the 4th. They're going to look at him and say, you know what, you are good, but you're not Carson Wentz. You're not Russell Wilson. You're not Patrick Mahomes. And I think all of those things will be held against him unless he can sit in front of Jerry Jones and say, look at the wins and loss columns. Look at what I've accomplished as a leader of a team. Now you need to pay me accordingly.
Talking to Ryan Clark with us, and said the same thing. If Dak had been a first rounder for the Cowboys, this deal would have been done yesterday, and there would have been no problem. It would have been done, quite frankly, long before yesterday in all this. RC, when push comes to shove, is this guy playing for a different team in 2021? We know the franchise tag, a second year, is an option on this one, albeit a pretty tough one. Is he playing for a different squad?
You know what? I believe he is. I just think that when you look at this deal, this isn't a Kirk Cousins situation in the sense of how Kirk wasn't necessarily a starter. He wasn't loved by Jay Gruden. I mean, Dak Prescott has really done everything and anything you could ask of him. When you look at guys like Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, who were drafted in the first round, the number one and number two pick of that draft with Dak Prescott, you can argue that on many cases he's outperformed those guys. And so for him to not have a deal, I do believe that is disrespectful. And obviously Dak plays a part in that. He was going to have to accept something. He was going to have to compromise a little bit of his value or what he thought his value was in order to get a deal done, and he wouldn't do that. And so I think when you look at his brother Taz's comments, who says, you know what, I was never a Dallas Cowboys fan in the first place, and this is a huge reason why. So going forward, I don't know how long I will continue to be a fan of this team. That says to me, around the kitchen table, when they're sitting in the kitchen and they're chilling out and they're talking man-to-man, brother-to-brother, Dak is saying some things to him, and that family is feeling disrespected in a way why I don't believe they're going to try to bend to get a deal done. And if you look at Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, they have drawn a line in the sand about what they think about Dak Prescott. And that says to me that there's a huge possibility he'll be playing elsewhere.
We're talking to ESPN NFL analyst Ryan Clark on Golic and Wingo. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. So, RC, with that being said, we all know that if any player hits the open market the first day of free agency and they get signed, which would be this sort of a magical situation, you overpay for them. So when we live in a world where the Cowboys weren't willing to overpay, are we all going to be comfortable with whatever team would sign him in this scenario overpaying for Dak? I mean, if it takes $37, $38 million a year, average annual value, we still going to be comfortable with that?
You know what? I don't necessarily know if we are going to be comfortable with that. I think unless you have guys like Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, there's always those questions. Did you do too much? You can go back to Jared Goff's deal. It was, was he worth this deal? Did they do too much? Carson Wentz, after a team wins the Super Bowl without him, does he deserve this deal? Can he stay healthy? So I believe if you're not that dude, there are going to be questions. I said this early on in the offseason, before I even knew Patrick Mahomes was trying to get a new deal or going to get a new deal, I said there is no amount of money that Patrick Mahomes could ask for that I would think was absurd. It may be something that you can't do under the cap. It may be something that if you did it, you may put your team in a position to where you couldn't sign other valuable players. But there was no amount of money, no amount of years that when Patrick Mahomes came to you, he said, you know what, Pat, that's disrespectful. You and your representation are stupid. For mostly everybody else in the world, there is a number. And so if Dak Prescott gets a little more than we are expected, yeah, I think some guys are going to say, you know what, this team may have overpaid. But that's the situation with quarterbacks. If you find one that is good and that can be your quarterback for the next decade, that can hold your franchise down as a player, as a leader, as a person, sometimes you got to pay a little more for that because that's what the position warrants. So tell me why all of a sudden, after 4 years of being a good starter, last year ascending at least statistically into the top 10 in the elite of quarterbacks, would Dak Prescott be any different? And so I believe if he hits the open market, he gets a very good deal, a deal worth more than the Dallas Cowboys are willing to pay him, and he will have earned it.
Ryan Clark joining us, and this question is based off Derrick Henry leading the league in rushing and now getting the fifth best deal, what he's being paid as a running back in the league, and what we think of the running back position. Ryan, you were a defensive back. You work with defensive backs all the time to help them achieve their goals. Your son is a defensive back playing at Arizona State for Herm Edwards. I need the truthful answer here. If your son was growing up and playing and your son was a hell of a running back, would you let him keep going at running back or would you actively try and get him out of that position?
I would actively try to get him out of position, especially based on if he had the skills to do something else.
Right.
But there's really no rhyme or reason to it. Here's what I will say, Golic, is that when you look at Derrick Henry, and I think now he's the fifth highest paid running back, I think it's about right. Even though he led the league in rushing, I don't think many people take him over Saquon Barkley. Many people take him over Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, maybe even a guy like Nick Chubb. And so when I look at where he comes in compensation-wise, I don't necessarily think you point to Derrick Henry as the guy you use as the standard to say that running backs are overpaid. But when you look at the totality of the market, you look at what a guy like Melvin Gordon
had to settle on. Now Todd Gurley, even though he got the big deal in Los Angeles, being cut and playing for the Rams on the deal that he is on, which is a one-year basis. I think you say when the position is devalued or undervalued the way that it is, this is not something you want to do. When you look at the type of the amount of carries you have to take to be considered a number one running back or a bell cow, the type of beating or the amount of physical punishment you have to take at the position, and also the length of years these guys get to play, it just doesn't seem that the reward is worth the risk, the effort, and the output that it takes to play that position. And so, to me, if you're not Christian McCaffrey or, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, and people are throwing you money and a lot of it before it's even your time, it seems that the rest of these guys are overlooked. And so for me, I'd be like, hey, you go play something where you take less punishment, where you're valued more, where your career could be longer, and you also get more compensation based on what your peers and the people on your team are getting.
All right, so let's go stick with compensation and punishment then, because there's a guy who plays a position that's often compensated very well, who's dealt with a fair amount of punishment in his body during the career that has now led him to New England. RC, I remember you telling a story about seeing Cam Newton come running onto the field one time past you when you realized, all right, if quarterbacks are going to be built like that, maybe it's time that I start looking for something else to do with my time and all that. And so I wonder if now, where Cam Newton's at, coming off all the injury and the change of scenery, do you think it can still look like that? Can we still get close to the guy that he was now that he's in Foxborough?
You know, I think you can get close to that guy. I don't believe that guy still exists, though, Junior. I think that what Cam Newton was in that MVP year was special. I think it was the beautiful combination of all of his talent, all of his confidence, all of his ability in one season. And now if you go back to 2018 for the first eight games, that was the best passer we had ever seen Cam be. And then he gets the shoulder injury against the Pittsburgh Steelers on Thursday night. And now you have to deal with the foot. So I don't necessarily know if we ever see that type of individual talent displayed from Cam Newton. But he can absolutely win. He can absolutely be a great quarterback in this league. I think it just has to look a little differently. You have to use the play calling a little differently. You can't make him your number one option on short yardage situation, but he's still an option. You can't make him your number one option on goal line situations, but he's still an option. And so that allows you to do so much more with your playbook. But this is going to depend on Cam Newton's health. If Cam Newton is healthy, I still believe he's an elite and great quarterback in this league. And when you have a guy like Josh McDaniels and the New England Patriots organization, we know that they can morph into whatever they need to be each week to win. The huge part is this. When you look at Cam Newton's deal and you look at the way he was dealt with in free agency, what the New England Patriots have essentially done is given him $500,000 to come in for a tryout. Because the one thing we know about this team is if you don't fit what they want to do as far as the Patriot way, quote unquote, if you don't fit what they want to do as an offense, if you're not good enough that they feel you can help them win a championship, you will no longer be a member of that team. So Cam Newton's going to have a very short time to not only show him he can be the starter, but to show them that he is worth keeping around because he is close to what we used to know as Superman.
Ryan Clark, ESPN NFL analyst. Great stuff as always, my friend. Thanks for joining us. Hope you and yours are safe. Stay safe, and thanks for the expertise.
My man, have a great day.
Smart stuff from RC, and he's right, especially when he's talking about at the end. Like, when you really look at what Cam Newton is for the Patriots, I mean, this is as low a risk investment as the Patriots could possibly make. They give themselves the opportunity to see a player that, if he's healthy, I think we all agree is epic. It costs them very little money to do it, and now you get Cam with a chip on his shoulder coming in, and if his body, and I know that's a big if, but if his body holds up, my God, I mean, they're going to be a great football team.
This is standard operating procedure for the Patriots. I mean, they've done it. It's worked sometimes, and it hasn't worked sometimes. But either way, it's low risk. Low risk, and you're looking for high reward. And you can get it with Cam, and then you see if it works out. You see what goes on from there, and it's good for Cam. He's going to get to showcase himself in one hell of an offense that they know they can build around him a little bit. And what Josh McDaniels can do, some things with him that he couldn't do with Tom Brady. So man, this could be an absolute win-win.
Yeah, I understand that for some people, you know, for people who apparently don't like fun or anything like that, Cam's personality might not vibe with them. I don't know how you don't root for Cam Newton to succeed purely on what's capable. Like I always said, I watch sports to watch people do stuff that I never could have dreamed of doing. Right. Cam Newton is the most unique skill set to ever play quarterback in the NFL. Like, period. At least I think. Like, I don't think you've ever seen someone, I almost say something because he's otherworldly in the way that he's built and all this, that is built to do the things that he has done.
And I think to the point you made of what Ryan Clark said when he saw him run by him on the field, I equate that with like an NBA game. Until you go to an NBA game and you are on the same level as those guys and go, oh my God, they're so tall and so big and they move so well and handle the ball and have quickness, incredible feet. You're like, how does a person that large do that? That's the same with Cam. You see Cam, and if you got to see him on the same level and go, oh my God, this is a tight end. This is an unbelievably athletic tight end. This is an edge rusher who is playing quarterback. And I agree with you, because we look at size. You look at Ben Roethlisberger's like that size, but obviously nowhere near.
Well, like I say, he's not the build. He's not the athlete. He's
not the athlete at all. So you see a guy that big, and you see Ben move around the pocket, and guys bounce off him every now and then. But you see Cam being an actual athlete and running and being a dangerous runner for a guy that size.
Well, I guess that's what I mean. Like, I want to see someone who does stuff that, like, does this kind of stuff. And this is what he hinted at with Josh McDaniels. Like, you can do things with me you didn't do with Tom Brady. And that's the whole idea, is take a creative play caller, give him a guy, and now use it a little more judiciously. We know, and this is part Cam, like him functioning in the offense, Carolina, I always said, part of it was you needed to let him do the thing that he liked doing. He liked being involved in the running game. You saw the kind of energy he brought to it. When Cam got a couple of early carries, and I think this is going to be the key, if you find the right spots for a couple early carries for Cam where you, A, get the defense off balance, but more importantly, put him in a spot where he feels like he's a part of it in that way. He gets to go out there and get wind in his sails, because when Cam's got the wind at his back, there are a few guys better to have on your side than that.
And now we know Lamar Jackson is an unbelievable runner. We get that. I get it. But he's not the size of Cam. They're
different. Completely different. Russell Wilson is great when he's mobile. Andrew Luck used to be a great mobile quarterback. Yes. Ryan Tannehill's got some of that to his game.
Like, and Andrew Luck, quite honestly, was the closest in weight. Andrew Luck was like 240. I don't think people really realized how big he was.
But he wasn't like, you know, no, you know there's quarterbacks that like are more natural ball carriers that can just do it in a way where it looks comfortable. Yeah, and it never looked comfortable like that to Andrew.
We've talked a lot about bad coaching, and I understand that there's a lot of bad coaching in the NFL, but there are also great coaches in the NFL. And I'm not sure why when players, star players move, we suddenly presume that the coaches that they're going to play for have lost their minds and have no idea what they're doing. Josh McDaniels has the hype he has because he's already shown, and he did it in Denver with Tebow, that he will adjust his offense and make the most of the talent that he has. I find it hard to believe that Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick suddenly forgot how to coach, or they're so limited in how they coach that they can only coach one thing one way.
No
the
shot.
Reason that they're great is because they will be able to vary to those skills.
Absolutely.
So that's part of why I believe that we're underselling how good Cam's going to be to the Patriots.
No, absolutely. That's been a tough part of it. So very little stress there. Dad and I have been stressed all morning about everything going on without our Twitter accounts right now. We asked you guys at Golic and Wingo. Cleveland was voted and ranked. Did you see this, Dad? Your hometown.
I did see this.
The most stressed city in America.
They did like use like 42-point system or something and came up with this. Seriously?
Yep. And so we asked you, and we'll get to more of these before we end the show. But who or what from your favorite sports team could push your city's stress level past Cleveland? We'll get to some of those in a little bit. But at Golic and Wingo, keep hitting us with those. I can't see them. Ali, our producer on our show, is doing a great job of getting us some. Jason can see them. So we'll get to those as we round things out here. But at Golic and Wingo, what's stressing you out as much as apparently everyone where you grew up, Dad?
Why Cleveland? What's going on?
I don't know, but there's already one answer that makes me want to throw my laptop and run in traffic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, no doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and obviously all eyes are on the bubble. in Orlando right now. Let's head there via the Shell Penzo Performance Line, where we're joined by ESPN NBA reporter Malika Andrews. Malika, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate you hanging out with us. So the snitch line seems to be a big topic of conversation. I got to get the scoop on it. Like, how much are guys, like, how much is there a buzz within the facilities around the snitch line in general?
You know, I mean, you hear Rudy Gobert saying that he thinks that it's just a little bit petty and he doesn't really expect to be using it. You hear Dante DiVincenzo with the Bucks saying he understands why it's there. He thinks it's a necessity, but he doesn't really see himself using it. And then you got Doc Rivers out here wild and saying that he's going to be calling it on every team until the Clippers are the only one left. But in all seriousness, I mean, there are signs that are posted all around campus that say, if you see someone who is committing some sort of violation, this is the number that you can call. And also on the back of credentials for every media member, every player, every coach, there is a barcode you can scan in the app to report a violation. And to be honest, we need to retire. I agree with what Jalen said on Get Up this morning. We need to retire. It's called the snitch line, because this line is put in place to report people not wearing a mask. I know I'm not wearing one right now, but there is nobody else around me and I am outside. I've seen people inside who aren't socially distancing, who aren't wearing a mask. And what in a power imbalance, who is going to walk up to a player who makes significantly more than them, who is in a significant position of power over them, and say, hey, you need to follow the rules for all of our safety. It's safer to do it anonymously.
Absolutely, and that's exactly why it's put in there. It needs, you're right, it needs rebranding in this situation. So we'll get to work on that. But you mentioned you're outside. So where are you at in this process? You're you know, really one of the first people we've seen make this foray into the bubble. So where are you at in this process? And now what are you allowed to do as you've gone through the protocol?
Yeah, so I cleared quarantine. I can't even remember what day it is, to be honest with you, gentlemen, but I cleared quarantine over a week ago. We'll go with that. Maybe we've been here for 2.5 weeks, I think. I'm starting to lose track of time in here. But I'm essentially allowed to roam around the campus. But remember, the hotels are kind of spread out, so you can't just walk across the street to another hotel that houses other staff or teams or players or whomever. I'm kind of confined to the hotel that I'm staying at, which also houses teams. And then I go to practice. I go to about 2 practices a day right now. I'm kind of meandering around, kind of seeing what there is to see, watching guys fish. That's become a very popular activity during their downtime. But I really don't have as many restrictions on me now that I have cleared quarantine. My food is no longer delivered to my room. I can get that at the restaurants on campus. I can order from the pre-approved restaurants through the campus app. That's different than Uber Eats. That will get you in trouble because they're not necessarily following the protocol that the league has set.
Well, I tell you what, there have been some nice bass pulled out of those lakes. There's no doubt about that. I've been very intrigued by that. So, Malika, again, going back to the line that they can call, and, you know, everybody is having their fun with it to an extent, but we saw a couple of guys inadvertently, they say, break the rules, and it cost them 10 days of quarantine. I'm just wondering, if there is somebody who calls that line and said so-and-so wasn't wearing a mask or something like that, and that person admits that, is there discipline to that? Is there, well, if you didn't, because you didn't have your mask on for a while, that was unsafe, you have to go back into quarantine. Is there something like that, or is it just basically, hey, wear your mask?
Well, there's certainly some tiers, right, to the potential consequences that you face. If you were to leave campus and be directly exposed, potentially, even though it was an accident that those players did that, if you were to be put in a position where you were exposed, like they potentially were, to folks who haven't been tested every day, that is why they were put back in quarantine and it was that severe, because the NBA can't risk having someone be infected and walk around and have that be a breach of the bubble campus. But if someone, for instance, wasn't wearing a mask, they were on campus, they're walking around and potentially only interacting with other people who have been routinely testing negative, for them, they would get a official, it's an official warning from the league that comes in either written form or via, you know, a phone call. And it's an official warning. It's not something you can just, you know, brush aside. It's a couple strikes and you're out. But there are definitely tiers to the kind of consequences that one would face.
We're talking to ESPN NBA reporter Malika Andrews. She's down in the bubble in Orlando. It's Golic and Wingo. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. Malika, you mentioned you've been going to a couple of practices a day. I'm really curious after the layoffs and how long it's been since guys have been together. How does the basketball look so far?
Well, there's a range, right? You have Giannis Antetokounmpo after one of the Bucks' recent practices being, I would say, a little hard on himself, saying that he really felt like he did not play well at all. But we all know that Giannis has an incredibly high standard for himself. And then you have folks like Victor Oladipo who's saying, you know, these practices have finally given me the ability to get my legs under me to the point that I may even feel comfortable playing this season, even though I ruled myself out a couple of weeks ago. And then you have folks like Kemba Walker. I was at the Celtics practice yesterday, and he was sitting on the side because right now, Brad Stevens said he's on a plan where it's every other day he's practicing and he'd just done an incredibly hard workout the day before. So there's definitely variance to the levels of basketball that's happening, but it's slowly but surely improving. And that's what the scrimmages are for, to kind of get those basketball legs back underneath guys.
And so we know this has been multi-pronged. There's been the health portion of this. There's the basketball that we've come back with. And then there's obviously the component of this tied to social justice that so many players voice concerned about. So as you've been around players and seen people start to settle back in, what has the conversation been like about what some players are still doing to try and make sure they're involved in progressing the conversation and progressing the movement that started before they got here?
Yeah, I mean, players have always said in coming to Orlando, one of the stipulations of that was that conversations around police brutality and the treatment of Black Americans is going to be front and center. And so you've seen Drew Holiday say that he is going to donate the rest of his game checks towards organizations that better the Black community. You saw that Jeremy Grant with the Denver Nuggets yesterday. Every single time, gentlemen, he was asked a question about basketball, he said something to the effect of, hey, Breonna Taylor, who was killed in March after police executed a no-knock warrant on her apartment, every time he was asked a basketball question, he said Breonna Taylor's killers are still out there. So he was refocusing those questions back to social justice. And then I talked to Nate McMillan last night with the Pacers, who said that his whole team sat down and watched Ava DuVernay's film 13th, that's about the 13th Amendment and how slavery in some ways is still legal in the United States. So it's absolutely still an active conversation that's happening on campus. And I imagine we will see it furthered when games start.
Malika, we really appreciate your time. Most importantly, stay safe while you're down there, but we appreciate the insight from the bubble in Orlando. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thanks for having me.
Malika Andrews, ESPN NBA reporter.
So she's in the bubble. We have Rachel Nichols and Mark Spears kind of on the outside doing their quarantine until they're allowed inside the bubble. And then I guess we'll keep sending some people down there, I believe, to keep filling out some spots.
As we update kind of the perception of what's going on inside the bubble, because remember that first wave when other players were going through the quarantine that her and Rachel and Mark and others had to go through on the way in, that was when the conversation about the food and all these other things popped up. Like she mentioned, this is what we heard going in. You've got access to all the restaurants around campus. You've got a little more choice involved in all this. So I think that's why you've seen a lot of the stuff that started to come out now has been the players leaning into what's available to them around there, settling into more of the routine of basketball, because the rest of that, after we got through that initial wave of when you're stuck in your room for that extended period of time, is more manageable now. And I think that's hopefully going to start to be the conversation surrounding that portion so we can get to the basketball.
They've been there about a week, so they get into their routine now. I think we do have to get another name for the phone line. Right,
the safety line, the health and safety line.
Maybe? We'll do that a little more tomorrow at Golic and Wingo. We'll try and get another name for that
I
line.
I didn't just nail it. Health and safety.
We're on something entertaining. Health and safety.
I mean,
is
the name of the show, Golic and Wingo. Like, there's something to just keeping it simple, right? Golic and Wingo. Like,
it does.
You know,
it needs to be inviting like that. But I like the emphasis on health in the portion of this, because I think driving that home makes it all right. This is about the greater good for all of us.
Look at that.
The Health Heroes line.
Oh my God! Now
health
you went
hero.
Okay, I want to put you back in middle school when somebody says, call the Health Heroes line and tell me that you don't roll your eyes and make fun of it for a week.
You're probably getting a wedgie.
You hear that line, you say somebody like Jason Fitz probably came up with that.
Oh, probably.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. It's very interesting where that went.
Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Jason Fitz, in for Trace, and with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. Mike, have some fun.
How dare you?
What?
try and steal book it out from under me,
wow.
Jason.
Wow.
The last 12 days. You got some nerve. You got some nerve there, buddy.
You know what? That's it.
It's time to play book it, Jason. Shut your big gapper.
If you're not nice to me, I'm going to leave in a couple of weeks.
It's a free-for-all with 12 days. It's a free-for-all.
So we got book it here. You guys know the drill. I give you a spicy take. If you want to throw a little razzle-dazzle on it, you shout book it at the end. Heat it up a little more. We played the sounder.
Put in the books!
Everybody has a great time.
Like a little poof of glitter or something? Is that the razzle-dazzle?
Yes.
Like the glitter poof?
That's a little... Whatever your version of razzle-dazzle is, Jason.
Glitter poof.
I'm going to give you the takes now. Okay. Derrick Henry leads the NFL in rushing. Dad, are you going to book it?
So last year, over Nick Chubb, did anybody remember Nick was second? By 46 yards. He was that
close. A much
closer
margin than you would have imagined based on the Browns team success versus the Titans and the nature of their offense.
And then a couple of 100 over Christian McCaffrey, who was third. So I look at the guys below him and how are they going to do it. Now, a lot's going to be on Christian, I think, to run the ball. Nick Chubb, there's so many other weapons in Cleveland. I just don't think he gets to that number again, though I think he's very underrated. And we know Tennessee is not this passing team. So I'm going to book it. I'm going to say he ends up winning the rushing
title.
Oh,
you
can
book it.
I am also going to book it. I think the most important stat there, the Titans 13-0 in all games when Henry rushes for at least 100 yards. Like, that's what Mike Vrabel is going to do. He's going to run the football. So, you know, I don't see any reason why the offense is going to change and why they're going to stop doing what they do. Henry's going to lead the league in rushing.
Jason, you know those stats aren't predictive.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on. I'm just.
It's 2020. We don't have to do that.
It's a pattern that shows that they run the ball a lot because
it's
his yards per carry isn't crushing.
It's a pattern that shows when you're winning games, you tend to run out the clock a lot. That's what we know now. And we know because of this, I don't think he's going to win it just because I think there are too many other capable rushers. Like Saquon Barkley was a little banged up last year in a way that we think and hope is an anomaly. He's going to have a shot as these offenses all get better. And that's what happened with the Titans last year. Their offense overall got better. Ryan Tannehill helped them open up that passing offense and get a lot better. So I think the way the Browns, the Giants potentially are poised to do this, I think that rising tide of the offense is going to help lift these running back ship. So I am going to not book this.
Ooh.
Oh.
Jason, Myles Garrett will have more sacks than Chris Jones. You book it?
Actually, Chandler Jones.
Chris Jones. Chandler Jones plays for the Cardinals.
Right.
We're going Chris Jones.
Yeah,
Chris Jones. And the answer to this is Myles Garrett will have more sacks than Chris Jones. Yeah, I'm booking it all day, every day. Myles Garrett, obviously, 10 sacks in 10 games last year, missed 6 games. I know that Chris Jones is a force, but, you know, I got to have some reason for hope. So I got to hope that his production dips a little bit. Myles gets more games in. So there we go.
I think outside of Aaron Donald interior pass rushers, too, Chris Jones is going to put up big-time sack numbers for an interior deer lineman. But the trajectory Myles Garrett has been on, I think, should be on a different level.
I agree. I expect both of them to perform. I guess I just got mixed with Chris Jones being an interior rusher.
Both coming off the potentially signed new deals and all this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going with Myles Garrett. Yes, I will. I will book that.
Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr., Jason Fitz with us. Presented by Progressive Insurance. Let's continue booking some stuff. Jason, Ben Simmons will hit a 3 during the seeding games. You
going to
book it?
I am going to book it. This has been all about confidence in that shot. We've heard reportedly that he does it all the time in practice. And now there's a social media video out there of him just throwing it up, and it looks beautiful, right? So I'm going to book this all day, every day. It's going to be the guiding light for people. What will be fun is that the arena will be silent, so we'll get to hear how the players actually react to the shock and awe of the moment, which I'm here for.
A bunch of guys just shouting, take it at him, as they sag off him on the three-point line. I'm not booking this one. I think, it's going to be interesting how this effect that we hear him now all of a sudden experimenting with him at what they believe could be a more natural position at the four for him playing forward in a lot of this and the opportunities that may or may not create. But I think in different circumstances, no way he's going to do a different thing now when he couldn't in his comfort
zone. He sticks to his 10-footers. I'm not booking this. He ain't making a three-pointer.
All right, here we go. Dad, I'll come right back to you then. Right. Book it. Tua Tagovailoa will be the day one starter for the Dolphins this year.
No way I'm booking that. I mean, we need to get into a discussion about the rookie quarterbacks and the thought of what they possibly could have done to what is reality because of the offseason. And you have Ryan Fitzpatrick there. I mean, if you had nobody else there, you could maybe see it and just say, hey, dude, go on, sink or swim. But with Ryan Fitzpatrick there, I don't think there's any way that happens. I am not booking it.
I'm also not booking it. That's why they kept other Fitz around, was just for this moment. So he'll get it done.
I think based on bank accounts, you might be other Fitz there, friend. Ryan Fitzpatrick has earned our respect, and we will give it to him here. I'm not going to book this one either. It is an interesting discussion. The other name we were talking about in the last break in this realm, Joe Burrow, you have to wonder if there's part of the Bengals that don't regret being right. able to keep Andy Dalton around on what was a pretty manageable number for a guy that could have bridged the gap in that time. Dad, Dak will be a two-time franchise tag player.
I can't see it. I can't see them having a cap hit of $38 million. Maybe I'm naive, but I don't see it. I'm not booking that.
I'm going to book it. And I think it's because I do think the Cowboys are going to have a hell of a season. Dak's going to have a hell of a season, and Jerry's going to be backed into a corner. Dak can't turn it down. He can't refuse it. So he'll get stuck in there, and he'll be having to play there for another year. They'll just absorb the number.
I'm not going to book it, I think, and I hope one way or another, whether it's through monstrous success or a playoff bomb, that the decision gets made in all this one. So we can finally talk about Dak getting a chance at a place that seems to really want to embrace him when it comes to all this. I think that's maybe me, again, as we wish things into existence around here, that Dak finally gets into a situation where he's appreciated for being a quality young quarterback that you could build around.
God, you think he's already getting heat? Imagine when he signs a mega deal with a new team.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.